Human beings, we're all one. Human beings are social creatures. All of us are, to varying degrees. I heard yesterday a conversation between some members about the difference between introverts and extroverts, but we're still human beings regardless of that distinction. There are both advantages and disadvantages to being social creatures. We're born into families and we begin developing relationships right from the very beginning. We can't even remember them. It's so early in our lives that they begin. And as we grow, we get involved in other activities. We get into clubs, we get into sports, hobbies, church, and other things as well. Most people place a very large emphasis on the things that they belong to, and they value those groups. Modern research shows that there are enormous benefits to belonging to different types of groups in this fashion. Among the benefits that they've been able to cite are reduced stress in one's life. It just seems to go along that the idea that if you are involved with groups, your stress levels go down. They experience and report better immunity system performance, less sickness. Anybody want to be more healthy? I know in the last few years I've been experiencing some struggles there. And lastly, increased life expectancy as well. These are all benefits of just the social interaction, being connected to people. Professionally and academically, they report that there are higher levels of engagement and productivity and even loyalty among people who are connected to others. Students and workers report a sense of belonging that enables them to collaborate more effectively and to speak out with ideas without fear of judgment or reprisal from the teams that they're on. They build trust through these relationships. Today we'll explore this sense of belonging through the Bible and review how we can benefit from it. We'll start with what it looks like to lose that sense of belonging and the potential consequences. Luke 15, we're going to start with the parable of the lost son. There's two groups in Luke 15 that Jesus Christ is speaking to. One is the scribes and the Pharisees. The second group is the tax collectors and the sinners. And in their world, the two were not allowed to mingle. They were very, very much on opposite ends of the room, if you will, if they even would stand in the same room. And Jesus gave them three parables focused on this divide, including the parable of the lost son. We'll start in verse 11. And he said, a certain man had two sons. So we have a family to start with. Sometimes families have issues, and chances are you've experienced this yourself. This family is about to have some big issues. A certain man had two sons, and the younger of them said to his father, Father, give me the portion of goods that falls to me. You know, many people would think this is pretty audacious. And it is. It is pretty audacious. But we'll find later that his father is not a poor man. And I found an interesting way of looking at this that I hadn't noticed before. I'll share that in a moment. You know, in families where there is some amount of wealth, it isn't unusual for one child to want to start a business and to ask for a little help getting started. Occasionally, families are able to do so. I thought I'd give a modern example of this just to kind of highlight this idea. Because at first, it really sounds very extreme that he would actually say, hey, I'd like, you know, my inheritance early. Jeff Bezos is a very well-known person. He owns, or he started, the website Amazon.com in 1994. He was 30 years old. And he put all of his money into it. It was $10,000. It wasn't enough to get this thing started. But he had an idea. And he went to his parents, who actually had a little bit of money. And he presented his idea, and they went back and forth. And they decided to loan him, it was about $250,000, thereabouts. So they invested in his business. Today, Jeff Bezos is among the wealthiest people in the world. Top five, depending on the valuations in the stock market. How did his parents do on that particular investment? Their return on their investment is estimated at more than 12 million percent. So the idea that in our parable that the young man would go to his father, who has some wealth, and say, hey, I'd like, you know, some money. Now, it doesn't flesh it out in the parable from Jesus Christ. But the idea that a family member would go to a parent and say, I'd like to do something here, it's not untoward automatically. Not yet. Not yet. There's nothing so far in Luke 15 that's out of line. He belongs to a family with wealth, and he's looking to make his mark on the world. Almost every young person is trying to get out there and do something big. And so he asked the family for help. We're in verse 12. And the younger of them said to his father, Father, give me the portion of goods that falls to me. So he, the father, divided them to his likelihood, to his livelihood. Now, I have a question. If your child came to you one day, and even if you don't have children, if you're a teenager here and you think about one day I might have children, if your child came to you one day and said, hey, I'd like to have my inheritance early, would you just hand it over? No. No, you would not. I have to imagine, even though it's a parable, it's not, you know, a story of what actually happened, but there would have been discussions, right? There would have been questions. There would have been evaluations. Where are you going to use it? How are you going to, you know, make it back? How are you going to cover it? How are you going to live? What's the risk that you're taking? There would be an understanding between you and your child before you would invest in some type of business in this fashion. Only when you were satisfied would you consider agreeing to the proposal. Now, Christ's parable does not mention any of this. It's not germane to his point. But if you consider the parable as it may have happened in real life, or may happen in real life, there would be discussions before handing over a large sum of money. Let's continue in verse 13, because this story is about to shift. Verse 13, and not many days after, the younger son gathered all and together and journeyed to a far country. Now, if you're younger in this room, if you're a teenager or something, you know, in that time frame, please pay attention to this part, because you're about to come to a place in your life where you're going to go out into the world. So let's pick this up. It's a far country. It's an exciting place. It's a whole different culture with different sights, experiences, and people that look different. They sound different. They've got accents. They dress different. Everything's different. It's so exciting. But in this case, the young man did this, and he wasted his possessions. Continuing here in verse 13, he wasted his possessions with prodigal living. Let's think back to that previous conversation that he had with his father. He said, Father, give me the portion of goods that falls to me so I can go waste it on prodigal living. Do you think his father would have given his money if that had been the question? No. There was some kind of plan. If your child came to you with a plan like this, would you say, sure, here's a check? No. Whatever that pie in the sky plan was, the son failed. He fell flat on his face. Not only that, he didn't fail because there was an investment that he made that went the wrong way. He failed because he misspent and misused the money. Once he reached that land and the people that were completely foreign to him, his upbringing, his values, the people he belonged to, his behavior became unacceptable. He took a portion of the family's wealth and blew it. This was not the plan. Verse 14, the story gets worse. But when he had spent all, there arose a severe famine in that land, and he began to be in want. So he's far from home. It's not an exciting culture anymore. The lights and the sounds are not, you know, pleasing any longer. He's probably greatly ashamed over his downfall. He's afraid to admit his failure and reach out to his family. He's cut off. There would have been plenty of people around when he was spending the money, right? He would have had a lot of friends. He was the fun guy at all the parties. until the money ran out. And when the money ran out, so did they. He has no protection. He has no funds to fall back on. There's no safety net for this guy. He's completely exposed, and a famine hits. So in the parable, what does our young man do next? He went and joined himself to a citizen of that country. I have to wonder. Now, it's a parable again, right? Always keep that in mind. But what would be easiest to reach out to? Somebody you knew. Somebody that knew him when times were good, if you will. And now he's got to go to this person practically asking and begging for some type of job just to feed himself. And that person had lands and they owned livestock, so they didn't lose their wealth. It was the young man who did. Perhaps he thought the person would give him a responsible, well-paying job. Instead, continuing the verse, and he sent him to his fields to feed swine. That's quite a come down. You know, consider again the people that this man belonged to, where he came from, his origin, his family. They had a certain amount of wealth. They had stability. They were an intact family. They had a support system. They cared for each other. And we will soon see they even cared for their servants. They were known for that. And typically, when you're out in the fields taking care of livestock, you live out in the fields with the livestock. At least in these days, you are there and expected to protect them from predators and ensure that they're cared for, they can get to the water, and they make it back to wherever the processing plant is at the when the time is appropriate. It is an enormous drop in status for this young man. It is most likely humbling to the point of being humiliating. Verse 16. This is really the low. He would gladly have filled his stomach with the carob pods that the swine ate, and no one gave him anything. The money's gone, the friends are gone, the comfort is gone, the shelter is gone, the food is gone. He's alone. You talk about being busted flat. And that's our young man here. You remember the discussion on belonging at the beginning, and when I was sharing some of the research that had been done, another finding is that a person in isolation, that their mind and the brain starts to trigger threat and stress responses. Could very easily have started becoming more like the hermit, if you will, acting out, oddly, because he's isolated now and has suffered such loss. Please turn to John 14. John 14. In the midst of observing Passover with his disciples, Jesus spent a lot of time reinforcing the teaching of the Old Testament and providing insights and new understanding of those instructions. He gave them cause to believe the expectation that the promise to Abraham would be fulfilled, that God's kingdom would be on earth, and the hope of the resurrection. He was creating a common framework to unite all of them. But they were going to go through some very difficult challenges, and so they had to be prepared for that. And part of the way that he did that was to give them a community. So in John 14, Jesus shares instruction about that unity that he is creating among them. Verse 15, he says, if you love me. Now, if is a conditional statement, so there's going to be more to come with this. If you love me, keep my commandments. You know, many people in the world would profess to love Jesus, but how many keep his commandments? Jesus says there is a reward. Here it is. Verse 16, and I will pray the Father, and he will give you another helper. For how long? Till the money runs out? No. He will give you another helper, that it may abide with you forever. The Spirit of truth, whom the world cannot receive, all those people in the far country, the friends of our unfortunate young man, because it neither sees it nor knows it, but you know it, for it dwells with you and will be in you. I will not leave you orphans. He's pointing to a family relationship, unfortunately one where the child does not have the parent. I will not leave you orphans. I will come to you. It's family. He's building community. Verse 18 carries the idea that they are now brothers. They're not alone. One of the gifts that he gave them was each other. And that gift extends to all of us. How are we to treat each other? You know, in both the previous chapter and the following chapter, Jesus Christ gives the same instruction. Love one another as I have loved you. Remember, we're talking about belonging. We're using the parable of the lost son to try to understand a little bit about this sense of belonging. A person in the circumstance of that lost son, of that parable, often pulls back from people that they know. They're ashamed. They don't want to face the consequences of what they've done. And they don't want to admit the error. I mentioned before, it's humbling to the point of being humiliating. It's difficult to face that. So he ends up with those that he doesn't belong to or belong with, and unfortunately is on a path where he's going to change such that he doesn't belong with the people that he came from. That's not what God wants for us. Jesus Christ said we are to love one another as he loved us. That family relationship. We are that community for each other. We belong to each other. If you'll turn to Romans 12. Love is all over the New Testament, right? It's in the Old Testament too, right? But, it's all over the place. Trying to choose a particular place to go into it was very much a challenge. We'll put it that way. You know, belonging it gives us a sense of purpose. We'll come to the scripture here in just a moment. But belonging gives us a sense of purpose. We're united with those around us. You know, think about the word team, right? Whatever, you know, the effort is, if it's football, you're trying to, you know, score a touchdown. If it's, you know, baseball, you're trying to, you know, get an RBI, you know, bring things in and get a score. But building a sense of belonging does require a few things. And the ones that I picked out from some of the research that I did really have strong correlation to things that are in the Bible. One of the first is that we have to make an effort. If we want to belong to a group, we have to make an effort. If we're in the group, we have to make an effort to welcome those that want to belong to the group. We do have group norms, we do have expectations, and there are behaviors that we would have to address if they exist. But a person who is willing to repent and approach God and Jesus Christ in humility is someone that we should definitely be embracing. But you have to make an effort. You have to place yourself in the environment as best you can. With regards to church, we have an instruction not to forsake the assembly of ourselves together. Now, it isn't possible for everyone to be here physically. But those people who are not able to be here physically on a regular basis should still be reaching out to members that they know in the church to make sure that they are brought in. And for those who are watching online, you know, that's something that we're looking for. But we also have the responsibility to reach out to them. Phone calls, emails, even a card. You know, there have been several unfortunate things that have happened, you know, within our congregation in the last 2 years. And I know that people have written those that have suffered, you know, tremendously and sent, you know, a lot of love and care their way. I can only reinforce that. We're doing the right things. I just want to reinforce it. Another thing that is, you know, talked about in that research is being mindful of others. And I look at that as reducing self-orientation. Quite often the idea is that the more time that you're engaged with somebody talking about them or hearing from them and what's going on in their life, the more successful you are in that relationship, reducing your orientation to yourself. It is something that I strive to do. Philippians 2:3 says, "Let nothing be done in selfish ambition, including our relationships. In lowliness of mind, let each esteem others as better than himself." The Bible backs up this instruction from the research. The last one I'll mention is in Colossians 3:12. Because it talks about the need in relationships and the research, as you would expect, to be forgiving and to be flexible. Let's start in verse 12 instead of 13. Verse 12. "Therefore, as the elect of God, the church of God, the body of Christ, therefore, as the elect of God, holy and beloved, put on tender mercies toward each other, kindness toward one another, humility in your interactions with each other, meekness, long-suffering, bearing with one another, forgiving one another. And if anyone has a complaint against one another, even as Christ forgave you, you also must do." So we have to make an effort to belong, and we also have to embrace those that are seeking to belong. We have to be mindful of others, and we need to esteem others as greater than ourselves. And we need to be forgiving. Romans 12:9. "Let love be without hypocrisy. Abhor what is evil, cling to what is good." Our young man in the parable, he did not do these things. And he walked away from the values that he was raised with. "Be kindly affectionate to one another with brotherly love." He had all those friends when he had the money. Where were they? They didn't have this value. We'll go through it pretty quickly, but when he returns home, he receives love from the family. The brotherly love is a little late coming, but it comes. Continuing in verse 11, "not lagging in diligence. If you have the sense, hey, I should call someone, call them as soon as you can if you're able. I've been struggling with that. I think about people to call at 10:30 at night. I don't think anybody wants me to call them at 10:30 at night. But some of you have been getting phone calls while I drive home from work now. We can do that in those opportunities. Verse 12, "rejoicing in hope, patient in tribulation, continuing steadfastly in prayer." Think about this in terms of each other, the hope of what somebody else is experiencing. You have hope with them for what they're looking forward to. Patient in tribulation. Sometimes people have got a lot of stories and they're heavy, but we have to be patient and show love and kindness and empathy in those cases. And I think we do a great job of this. I'm just reminding. "Continuing steadfastly in prayer, distributing to the needs of the saints, and given to hospitality, caring for one another." We spent a lot of time at the beginning on the background of the parable of the lost son. It was a man that walked away from his support system, from his family, and from the safety of company that actually cared for him. People that he belonged to. And when he went to a foreign land, he saw something else, and he decided to behave differently. After having fallen into extreme poverty, surrounded by people he did not belong to, and they showed that when he actually was in need, he came to his senses. Let's turn back to Luke 15. This is where who you belong to proves itself. Luke 15 and verse 17. "But when he came to himself, he said, 'How many of my father's hired servants have enough bread to spare, and I perish with hunger. Remember I said he came from a family that had some money. Even the servants are considered, at least by him, as being very well taken care of. Verse 18, I will arise and go to my father, and I will say to him, Father, I have sinned. He's taking responsibility now. Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy. Total admission, total acceptance of the consequences. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. I've blown it. Make me like one of your hired servants. There's many times in life, I've known people in my own family who have done this, where they went and did something at some point in life, and they were so ashamed of it that they would just cut off whole sections of the family because they couldn't face the family. And the family wanted them to come and be there with them, but they couldn't face their own humiliation. Verse 20, and he arose and came to his father. But when he was still a great way off, his father saw him and had compassion and ran and fell on his neck and kissed him. Tremendous outpouring of love. There was no, hey, where's the money? Hey, where's that plan? You're walking. You're not wearing the big elegant robes that you thought you were going to be wearing. You were going to come back and, you know, show me what a great success. None of that. There was no desire to humiliate his son. Verse 21, and the son said to him, I have sinned against heaven and in your sight. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. Verse 22, but the father said to his servants, bring out the best robe and put it on him, and put a ring on his hand and sandals on his feet. He was not going to allow his son to stand there in complete humiliation. There was going to be changes. It wasn't a restoration back to everything. But he was lifting his son up out of that humiliation, out of a pit of despair, if you will. And bring the fatted calf here and kill it. And let us eat and be merry. For this, my son was dead and is alive again. He is lost and is found. And they began to be merry. He had some issues to work out with his son, with his brother. But they did reconcile. He returned to the people that he belonged to. And he walked away from those that he thought he belonged to for a short period of time. Brethren, we all belong to each other. We belong to God. He made it absolutely clear that we are his people. When you encounter times in life, as we all do, where you struggle, where you have doubts, where perhaps you've done something and you're ashamed, don't let it hold you back from the people that you belong to. Be reconciled and love one another.